All right. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar, which is a spotlight on India. All right. And so my name is Michelle Balorchi. I'm based in the Washington, D.C. office of IIE, the Institute of International Education. And I work on the Fulbright Scholar Program for South and Central Asia. And I'm happy to have a spotlight on India today, because India is one of the largest countries that we have in the catalog and in the region, of course. And today I am joined by Dr. Anuradha Needham of Oberlin College. She's a professor of English, and she recently returned from India just last month. And so she's joining us to share about her experience as a Fulbrighter to India, and she'll be taking your questions as well. All right. So just a little bit background on the Fulbright program. It was established in 1946. The State Department had, under the auspices of the State Department and Senator Fulbright, his initiative to bring people to people, people from across cultures together to enhance and foster mutual understanding across borders, across cultures. And since 1946, the Institute of International Education, on behalf of the State Department's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, has been administering the Fulbright Scholar Program. Today's webinar is geared towards academics, independent scholars, professionals, artists, researchers who are interested in teaching and researching abroad. If you are a student or a graduate student or a young professional, we do have the Fulbright Student Program, and you can check that out on the website. It's a separate program for students who are pursuing up to the PhD level. If you have a PhD and have some substantial work experience without a PhD, this would be the program you would be thinking about. Okay, so the Fulbright program in numbers, this is just a little overview to give you an idea of how large the program is. So as I mentioned, today we're speaking specifically about the Fulbright Scholar Program. We also have the student program, and there are several other programs for visiting scholars and specialists. But altogether, we've had more than 380,000 Fulbrighters go around the world and also as visiting scholars and students to the United States. From the U.S. Scholar Program specifically, we send about 800 scholars and professionals abroad. So that's what we're going to be discussing today. The program has 160 participant countries, and till date, we've had 37 heads of state, several Nobel laureates. And recently, this past Pulitzer Prize announcement, we saw that two former Fulbrighters have received Pulitzer Prize, and I'm happy to say that one of them was a grantee to India, Jake Halpern. So he's a cartoonist. He won the Pulitzer Prize this year. And of course, several MacArthur Fellows and Presidential Medal Freedom recipients. So if you get a Fulbright, you're in very good company. And, of course, this is, you know, what makes it such a prestigious program is not only what our scholars do in country during their grants, but what they do afterwards in their career. So this is just something we always like to share with the audience. Now, in terms of the core scholar program, today I'll be speaking about opportunities for faculty and professionals. We also have seminars available for international education administrators. And if you're interested in that, I would recommend the webinar that we're holding next week on May 2nd for the IEA seminars. But specifically in the core program today, the awards that we have are for teaching or research. And most of the awards in the catalog are from 3 to 12 months, so you can find shorter term options or for the full academic year. And a lot of them are open to all disciplines. So we have, out of the 470 awards in the catalog, about 270 are open to all disciplines. That means really the country is just open to hosting scholars from all backgrounds. There's no preference. And that's what we have for India today. I'll be going more into detail. The deadline this year is August 1st. And you can see here just in the graph the breakdown of what our scholars do. So about 17% do grants that are specifically just for teaching, so they opt for teaching grants. About 41% teaching and research combination, and then about 42% research. So there's really no particular way to do a Fulbright. It really depends on what your project entails or what you hope to do in the country of your choice, and so we'll be discussing those different opportunities. Speaking of the eligibility, that's one thing that we need to discuss right away, of course, is who is eligible to apply. So since this is a U.S. government program sending scholars abroad, U.S. citizenship is required. And then depending on the award, a PhD or a terminal degree may or may not be required. So there are several ways to search that in the catalog, doing a search that would be, you know, that would tailor to your profile. Many are open to master's degrees with several years of professional experience. We also have awards that are open to postdocs, early career applicants, so there's lots to look out for. And again, teaching experience would depend on what the award requires. So the key is really to taking a look at the award that you're interested in and seeing what exactly is required by that award in that country. We also have new policies on previous Fulbright grantees. So there is no lifetime cap as to how many Fulbrights you can have, so whether as a student or as a scholar. We just ask that you wait 2 years from the time that your grant ended to the time that you apply for a grant. So there needs to be that 2-year waiting period between grants. More eligibility information is available on our website under the eligibility tab and the FAQs. You can find more. And of course, if you have any other questions that you can't find the answers to online, feel free to reach out to me. I'm available to walk you through the process and set up a phone consultation if you like. So let's just dive right into what we're looking at today at India. So I'm pleased to say that India, as one of the, you know, it's the largest hosting country in the catalog. So it offers the most grants in the Fulbright Scholar catalog, which is wonderful news because that means there are that many more opportunities for scholars and professionals. We have two different kinds of all disciplines awards to India, as well as a regional research award where if you need a multi-country option, India could be one of the host countries. So as once this webinar is archived, you can take a look at the PowerPoint and click directly on the link. So the first one I'd like to talk about is the Fulbright Nehru Academic and Professional Excellence Award. So this is the grant, the award that has 45 grants available, including 15 for FLEX. So if you're not familiar with FLEX, we have more information on our website, but essentially the FLEX option is there for research projects that require multiple visits over a 2-year academic period. So this would, again, be only for research, but it is something that is available to the Fulbright Nehru Academic and Professional Excellence Award. Now, this is an all-disciplines award, and there are no preferred disciplines listed. That means really the whole gamut. It's open to whatever you propose that's an appropriate discipline at an appropriate institution. A great thing about this award is that a letter of invitation is optional. So if you are someone who is brand new to looking at India and you have no idea where to start or how to research a potential host institution, that is not a problem. It shouldn't be a barrier to you considering applying for an award to India. The Commission in India is very supportive of hosting Indian scholars and also, you know, scholars on India and specialists on India, but also they're very interested in hosting academics who have absolutely no connection or background in India. They are there to help and support you, and that's why they've made the award as open as they have, open to all disciplines, open to all ranks, so postdoc applicants are encouraged to apply. They have the Distinguished Chair Award, so more senior scholars are encouraged to apply. So really, they're open to professionals, artists, dancers, musicians. They are just very, they're very open to sending as many American scholars across the length and breadth of India, which is a vast country of more than 1.3 billion people. And so there's a demand and there's a thirst for sharing across, with colleagues from America. And so this is a wonderful opportunity. The Fulbright Nehru Award specifically has a grant length of 4 to 9 months. More information is available on the website, but the minimum is 4 and the maximum is 9. If you do flex, the parameters are a little different. For this award also, a PhD is not required. So again, if you are a professional that has several years of experience, but you don't have a PhD or a terminal degree, that is not a barrier. Locations are essentially, they're open to anywhere in India except for the state of Jammu Kashmir, so there's just a couple things to consider there. But otherwise, there's 28 other states in India to consider. You can be affiliated with a university or college, a think tank, an NGO, or research centers. And again, if you don't have an idea of where you may be placed, the commission is there to assist you. We have some information online that I could show you after our discussion. And so there really is loads of resources, a wealth of support in country once you arrive. And so India, it makes India really an ideal location, especially since all of your teaching would be in English if you choose to do teaching, and a lot of the resources are in English as well. Having lived there 6 years, I can attest to this. I was a student there in my master's program. I also did an MPhil from India, so I could also assist you or provide some suggestions in terms of what potential host affiliations you could consider or kind of steer you down the path of where you can find more information. The other award that I'd like to discuss is the Distinguished Chair, so much like the Academic and Professional Excellence Award, for the more senior scholars who hold a full rank, full professors, full-time professors, with an extensive publication list, then a Distinguished Chair Award might be right for you. This would entail teaching or teaching and research, and at a higher level, assisting with curriculum development, advising and mentoring students, and of course, going around beyond just your host institution, but going around and giving lectures and talks and sharing, your Fulbright experience with others. And so we do have two grants for the Distinguished Chair, again, for full-rank professors with, experts in their field with an established publication record. And then lastly, I just want to underscore the fact that if you do have a project for, that includes India, but it also requires visiting another country in the South and Central Asia region, the Regional Research Award for South and Central Asia, we call it the SCA Regional Research Award, would be something that you may want to explore. For the full list of eligible countries, check out the award on the website. There are a few countries that are not included in that. But for the most part, you will be able to, devise a project that would require a visit to 2 or 3 countries over a total of 9 months. So that might be a good option for you. But now I'd like to open it up to our guest speaker, Dr. Needham. So she's joining us over the phone in Ohio, and she was a Fulbright Nehru Academic Professional Excellence grantee. Her host institution was Jawaharlal Nehru University in New Delhi. And she recently returned, as in literally just last month, came back from her grant. So it's fresh in her mind. She's excited to be here and tell us about it. So I would like to open it up to you, Dr. Needham.
Yes. Yes, I'm here.
Needham, tell us a little about your journey your Fulbright journey, how it came to you to apply for a grant, and then why India?
Couple of reasons. I'm an English literature scholar, so most of my early career and actually late career has been in English literature. But then, with a book on secularism, I made a sort of shift to India, and I was particularly drawn to Indian cinema. And so, in 2013, I published a book on Shyam Benegal's films, and that more or less turned me almost completely towards India. I was beginning a project on women in Indian cinema with a collaborator, and this was the first time I felt that a Fulbright would serve me very well because it would allow me to go to India and work. I want to make one thing clear. Humanities is a difficult field to sort of think in terms of, especially if you're teaching English literature. And so, but cinema allowed me to make that turn towards India. A Fulbright interested me a lot because of all the other implications of sort of interacting with other cultures and interacting with people from different places, even in the U.S. So I was very attracted to it, but the film project allowed me to find a way of coming to India. Mine was a research award, by the way. And this is where I found people at the Fulbright Fulbright office in the United States in Washington, D.C., very helpful. I called early on and I'd said, I've been advised that a teaching and a research award is easier to get. Should I apply for one? And the person I was talking to, she said, do you want to teach and do research? I said, no, I actually want to research. She said, go for research then. Go with what you really want to do, and you will find a way of doing. So I want to put in a word for the office here. They are very helpful. I would say early on, as you start thinking about a Fulbright, and I hope you all will, you get in touch with people there, start talking to them. They give you all kinds of help, including putting you in touch with people who have just returned or who are working on projects that sound like yours might be. I found all those aspects very helpful. Michelle, what else can I say about the early part before I go on?
So I believe when we touched base last time, you had mentioned to, you know, really kind of start early and kind of think about taking your time, you know, researching what you'd want to do and really not to rush when you apply for this.
Yeah. So it took me almost a year to get all my stuff in order. One of the reasons was because this was my first shot at Fulbright fairly late in my career, I wanted to be sure that everything was right because I desperately wanted to get a Fulbright. And so I spent quite a lot of time consulting with people at the Fulbright office. And that's where, again, I'll say they were wonderful. They took me through each step and they encouraged me. There were things that they highlighted that wouldn't have struck me. And so I would say not only should you begin early, but you should begin by consulting people at the Fulbright office, office early on so that they can guide you as you speak to them. They are very good about getting back. My emails were always responded to very quickly, setting up times. I was in London at the time I was applying because I was teaching in my college's program there. It didn't matter. I would say this is a convenient time for me. They would make someone available. So I would say that is very important. You should also not automatically dismiss if you're not doing a kind of a social science project, humanities. It turned out cinema was very important. Now, of course, I was doing Indian cinema. But it's now that everything is available on YouTube, it's hard to make the argument that you need to go to India to watch films. But the argument I would sort of make is you need to be in the place where the films are being made and where they are about in order to. So there are ways in which you can make an argument for India. That was one of the things that the people at Fulbright highlighted for me. They said, India should be central to the way you think about your project because otherwise they'll say, why India, you know? So as you are working your way through, I at every step I would check with people and say, does this sound about right, or does that, and then they would add to it, and it was very helpful. So I would say begin early, begin consulting with them, with people at Fulbright early, and you'll be in fairly good shape. And I strongly recommend. I mean, it was a wonderful experience for me. I'm still sort of reaping the fruits of it right now as I work on my chapters. Yeah.
Excellent. And Dr. Needham, could you speak to how you decided upon a particular host institution? You mentioned, you were at JNU, but you also were at the archives. So how did that work?
Okay. So in my case, because the project itself was defined fairly clearly, I knew that there were at least two places I needed to be in. I wanted to be two or three places. I wanted to be in touch with film scholars because one of the things that I discovered in my field was that Indian film studies, although it's very recent, it's a very vibrant field. And so there are scholars who are thought of internationally as very well known, and you know their work is presented in all kinds of global fora. So the people I wanted to work with were at two institutions in Delhi, Ranjini Majumdar and Ira at Jawaharlal Nehru University, and Ravi Vasudevan at Center for the Study of Developing Society. So I wrote to both of them. I had sort of a nodding acquaintance with both of them. I wrote to both of them early. I found out about what they had available in their institutions, on the basis of which then I found that JNU would serve me better because they actually have a program in cinema studies. They have a kind of growing library also over there. And one of the advantages of doing that was it was easy then for me to secure letters from them, letters of invitation from them. Now, letters of invitation aren't required, but this was, again, one of the things that emerged from the conversation. People said, if you do manage to secure, then people are assured that your work is India-centered and so on and so forth. So, again, it's just a question of, so I decided on the basis of what resources would be available to me. But as it turned out, both institutions and both faculty or personnel from both places turned out to be very, very helpful.
Oh, excellent.
In fact, in one of the photographs, which was from a panel that I'd organized, Ranjini is sitting, Ranjini and Ravi are both on that panel. So they were willing to, they were willing to do things that I could organize. Yusuf wanted me to organize, and so on. Yusuf is the United States and India Education Foundation, which handles
the Fulbright. Yes, otherwise known as, the Fulbright Commission in India, Yusuf. So could you speak then a little to what your involvement was at your host institution, and then also we see, the different talks that you gave here in the photographs. One was at the University of Chicago's Delhi Center. So could you speak a little as to how you got around as a Fulbrighter in India?
My host institution turned out to be the Yusuf office, because they organized a lot of stuff for me, and I was very grateful for it, because that forced me to actually start writing different parts of my, different aspects of my project as I was doing the research over there. And it encouraged me to present this work and to elicit responses from the audience. And the audiences are very vibrant, and I'll speak about that in a moment to why it was so important for me that audiences in India were responding to what I was saying. So Yusuf was very helpful, and I would say if you do go to India on a Fulbright, be open to the idea of making presentations. When Yusuf people approach you, don't say no, because that could be one of the best things that happen. It makes you actually present your work. It allows you to do substantive, it allows you to make substantive advances on your research, because you don't want to go in front of an audience and say stupid things. So you do the work and you present it, and they provide all the resources. They make the contacts. They provide transportation for you. Someone from USIF always accompanies you. So it's really a very high class affair, I should say. And but what was most significant for me was I presented my material in colleges actually that I had been at, I myself was educated in, because I grew up in Delhi. I presented at the, and the students were just, the students and the faculty were just amazing. They were so engaged. And one thing that I can never get in the U.S., because that is not a history U.S. students bring or faculty bring to it, is a whole is this incredible knowledge about Indian cinema, because people clearly watch, even if they're not watching old films like I was talking about, they know what Indian, you know, what Hindi cinema, what the tropes are, what the music is, and so on. So it really made an enormous difference when they would ask questions, because they could always add to what I was presenting. And that has sort of helped me flesh out my topic even more. So that is one major argument that can be made, that you need to be in the place if you are studying materials from that place. It's not a question of just sitting in the, you know, in the solitude of your study and looking up the internet and reading sources from the library. You need to actually be in the place to experience that kind of interaction. And it gave me the opportunity to actually serve as an ambassador, allow for that interaction that happens between people from coming from different cultures, as it were. Yeah.
Right. Could you speak a little bit about, I know that you attended the Fulbright conference, the mid-year conference in India. So could you speak a little bit about what that is and why it would be great for Fulbrighters who are in India as grantees to attend?
Yeah, okay. Can you hear me?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I suddenly lost your voice for a minute. So the conference happened just as I was getting ready to actually depart, and it was a wonderful, wonderful thing. It was very well organized. They make all the arrangements. They put you up in a hotel for three nights. People come from all over. So we had people coming from most of the south. People were there from Kazakhstan. They were from there were people from Nepal there. There were at least two people from Sri Lanka and who had gone to Sri Lanka, not from, but who had gone to Sri Lanka. So it was not just the people from India, but from around the place. And
so other Fulbright grantees to the region.
Right, exactly. Uh-huh. And I think the staff and the personnel that manages those programs, some of those people were also there. So you could have these great conversations. And it provided two or three absolutely wonderful opportunities for two or three different kinds of. One, you got a lot of time to spend with people, you know, talking about their projects with them individually. But you also, I mean, I attended virtually
I think we're losing you a little bit. I think there's a connectivity issue. Hang on. Can you try speaking again?
Oh.
I think it might be her computer.
Okay. Anu, are you with us still?
Yeah, I'm here, but your voice is breaking up. Is that
okay?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, so could you actually just kind of start from discussing about, you know, you said grantees were from all over and you were discussing not just on a one-on-one, but something, and we lost you after that.
Oh, okay. So what I was saying was the sessions that I attended, all the sessions, and they were really of a high order. I came to know, I mean, I was astounded by the range of topics covered. I was astounded by the range of ages, you know, because I went and heard student researchers speak. I went and heard senior scholars speak. I went and heard, you know, scholars who are just beginning out. So it was quite an astounding range of topics and people placed differently in the profession, and the papers were of very high caliber. The presentations were of a very high caliber. And very good. And there were great opportunities to socialize and to mix around and meet all the people. So that is where I made a lot of friends that I now correspond with regularly on email.
Excellent. Yeah, so really kind of expanding the network and getting to know other Fulbrighters, right?
Yes,
Were you in contact with other Fulbrighters in Delhi where you were placed?
Yes, two or three. Actually, one Fulbrighter I had met in Oberlin College actually before she left. She was a friend of a student of mine at Oberlin, and so I met her before she went too. But through her, I came to know some others. But I also met other Fulbrighters through, for example, the panel I organized at University of Chicago's Delhi Center, and then of course at the conference itself, I met quite a few of them, yeah.
Okay. And what would you say to applicants who are just considering India? They may or may not have decided upon a particular award, and their work doesn't necessarily relate to India, but what would you say in terms of India as a place for research and teaching for an American scholar coming from, you know?
Mm-hmm. So I this part of what I'll say is from secondhand experience. One of my students went to University of Hyderabad as a Fulbright scholar, and she found that actually she had access to a lot of wonderful resources. She was working particularly in the area of translation, and before that she had gone I think again as a Fulbright scholar to Madagascar, and she had translated her honors project for me was on translating from French and writing about translation, and she continued with that in Hyderabad, and she found the libraries there very, very useful. She found that people were, even when the libraries weren't well stocked, the people had resources that they could draw their attention to. In Delhi, of course, you're very lucky because you have the Teenmurthy Library, and that is really, I mean, quite an impressive place where you can. I am told there are similar establishments. A lot of time what you depend upon, of course, are the contacts you make, and those people then provide you with access to resources that they have. So it's not like going to a library here, you know, just, but you have a different set of resources when you go in there. If you're working on cinema, for example, they have the National Film Archives, which are really quite, and the personnel there are incredibly helpful. And I'm told that there are places like that in art history and other disciplines where you get you can have the same kind of interaction and find very helpful personnel.
Mm-hmm. And then was it required that you get any permits to go visit these archives? Did Yusuf, the commission, help in any way, or how did that work for you?
Well, I went to the film archives, but I had been there before, since I'd done my earlier project on it also. So they recognized me, so they didn't give me any. But I always carry a letter. I carried a letter from the Yusuf office provides you with a letter. They provide you with several copies of for you to. So I, for example, I would always just show that letter, and some people will keep a copy of it. So I had several copies made. Of the day you arrive, when you arrive, you set up you meet up with the people at Yusuf, and various people give you, you know, they help you out with things that you need. So you have this one-on-one interaction with people in the office there, and they help you negotiate the initial sort of arrival. You know, how do I find myself a phone? How do I do all those things are addressed in that meeting. They provide you with a folder. All your medical stuff, but also things like that, you know, letters of introduction, other information you might need, access to websites that you can use for, in my case, they were all Delhi Delhi-based. And then I also took a letter from my institution for access to the libraries. But mostly, I was just using the material that Yusuf office gave me. You know.
Mm-hmm. And that brings me to another point, Dr. Needham. You talk about the support and all the great assistance you had from the Fulbright Commission in India. How did you? I know we get a lot of questions from applicants about how they work it out with their home institution, and I know it's on a case-by-case basis, but did you work with the campus liaison, the Fulbright campus liaison, or how did you kind of broker that, or were you already up for sabbatical? Could you just talk about that?
So I was, this was my sabbatical year, so I simply took the whole year off, and if I hadn't gotten the Fulbright, I would have been very disappointed, but I would have stayed and worked in my office here. But I did not work with the Fulbright liaison because this is an undergraduate institution. Most of their efforts are focused on the undergraduates who are applying for mainly teaching positions, you know, one-year positions to go to various places. And actually, my disappointment has been there's virtually no one who goes to India from here. You know, I don't understand. But partly maybe because of language. We don't teach any of the languages of South and Central Asia, so they just don't go. But partly it is that there is no fully developed program, but that's a separate issue. I did not, but what I did have access to was two very wonderful sets of resources. One of my colleagues from history had served on the Fulbright, you know, the people who comment on grants and stuff like that. And I talked with him pretty extensively, and he helped me a lot. And the other resource was, of course, I called the people in your office, and I spoke with people, you know, the people who were responsible. You were not there at that time. I spoke with someone else, but I got an enormous amount of information from them. And then once, of course, you get the Fulbright, then, of course, you have these webinars where they put you in touch with people from, and then the Delhi office, in my case, it was the Delhi office. I'm sure if you're going someplace else, it'll be there. They were very proactive about being in touch, getting information to you, and so on and so forth.
And were there regular check-ins with the commission, you know, throughout your stay?
I signed up for the U.S., you know, they have a program, and they would inform you. Beyond that, I did not need that. And you got invitations for, like, Halloween and stuff like that, which I didn't go to.
All right.
But Yusuf was very good about, I mean, I could call them just about, I would, you know, usually I would correspond by email, and they could get back to you about just about anything very quickly. And so I never felt that I was not able to get information that I wanted.
Okay, excellent. And Dr. Needham, did you bring anybody with you from your family? Were there any dependents that you brought with you? And if you could maybe speak about how that was.
Yeah, so my husband went with me, and I'm not a very good example of it because my children didn't go, so I didn't have to, you know, my children are too old. They didn't need schools and so on and so forth, so they didn't accompany. My husband accompanied me, and both of us, I mean, there is a process that most Fulbrighters will have to go through about securing visas. We didn't have that because my husband has an OCI card and I have an OCI card, so we were both, you know, we were fine with that. But the one thing I did have to get was clearance for my project. That has to come from the Consulate General, whichever area you are in. Mine came from New York. And there also the Yusuf people were very helpful. They send you all the paperwork, you know, the certificates and the host institution, you know, the affiliation with an institution, all that material they send you. So they make the process easy for you. Mine was very quick. Once I got the material to them, I heard back from them within a week and got my certification. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, excellent. So let's see. We do have some questions. Oh, the first question is, will the PowerPoint be available later? And yes, we will be archiving this. So if you'd like to listen again or get more information on the links that are in the PowerPoint, this will be archived within about a week on our website where you went in to sign up for the webinar. And let's see. Could you speak a little bit more, Dr. Needham, about conducting research, the research, you know, you had in your proposal, you requested 6 months grant and you went out and did that in Delhi. How did it meet your expectations being on the ground and working with the archives, and how was it like just as an experience in India conducting the research?
Again, I'm a little bit of an anomaly since I wasn't doing this the first time. I had been earlier in those. The bulk of the research, the archival research, I did at National Film Archives. And as I said, they were very helpful. The one thing you have to be prepared for, and it can become sort of humorous after time, there were days on which they would simply be shut down because there were holidays that I didn't know anything about. So each, so I was going from Delhi to Maharashtra, and they had different holidays, and so they have regionally specific things that go on. So sometimes I was sort of left to my own devices. I mean, I would find that, oh, you know, today I'm not going to be able to go to the archives because they are closed. Sometimes the people I wanted to meet with wouldn't be there, but they always, if I was careful about making appointments ahead of time, I had no difficulty meeting up with, they would either find someone who would do the same work that the person, because you do need help to get around the archives. And so that was the good part. The other research I did was, some of the research was sort of accidental and serendipitous, because I would go and make a presentation and someone would say, have you read such and such? Which in the normal course of events I may or may not have stumbled upon, so then I would go to the library and I would. So the research was, I'm still in the early stages, but because I was encouraged to make these presentations, I gained access to material that I wasn't expecting to get that material, but I got it, and I'm very glad I got it. So I think people going into those situations should be prepared and should be should look forward to those kinds of encounters where someone will tell them, oh, you know, you should read this or read that. That, for me, was some of the most exciting research I did. Yeah.
Excellent. And we have another question. Could you speak a little bit more about the research clearance and about the support in terms of accommodation, if the commission supported in any way?
Accommodation in what?
Lodging, I believe.
Oh, lodging. Okay, so I did not use, they provide a real estate, they provide a realtor to help you find a place. And unfortunately, I can't even speak to it because the two or three Fulbright people I met with and sort of grew close to, they had all arranged their housing beforehand. None of them, so far as I know, used the service that, but Fulbright does provide you with that service.
Okay.
They pay up to a certain amount to the realtor as well.
Right. So, and in terms of the research clearance for your project?
The research clearance, I think you run into trouble if you are researching, areas that are not allowed or that need special clearance. Mine was not one of those. It's an elaborate process, but if you submit all the paperwork, the instructions are fairly clear. The Fulbright handbook, it contains all the information and what all you're supposed to submit. And at various points, as I was collecting all the materials, you have to send a fairly big package to whichever consulate you are dealing with, several copies of, you know, including information on your dependents. But it's explained very well in the handbook. So it's not difficult. As I said, I submitted my materials on Monday, and by Friday I got my research clearance. It was just a letter from the consulate saying, you are hereby, you know, cleared for carrying out, you know, this is your clearance certificate for, and they named the project. And so it was very quick. It was putting together the package that took me some time. And as I said, there were 7 copies of everything. You had to fill out information about the project. You had to attach your proposal. You had to, but all those materials we have on hand. It's just, and you know, the materials that are sent to you by the USIF office, the grant letter and the certificate of affiliation and so on and so forth. So it's not, the materials are all there. It's simply a question of time, you know, that you need to put all this thing, all these things together and send it off.
Right. And in terms of the Fulbright handbook that you mentioned, someone asked, is that a resource that you receive once you're selected, once you become a grantee?
Yeah. So you get 2 kinds of handbooks. You get the handbook, the general handbook from CIES, I guess. You know, whichever office sends out the first notification. So they send a handbook, and theirs is a more general handbook, although it covers several areas that are important because you also have to negotiate that. You have to put grant information up on their portal and stuff like that. And then you also get a handbook from the U.S., from USIF. I basically had access, I had 2 handbooks. The second one was the one that had information for the research clearance and all that.
Right. And so the research clearance, we're getting a few more questions about that. Just to make it clear, that's a process that takes place after you've been selected for the award. Correct.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So you don't have to worry about getting that before applying for the fellowship, for the scholarship. That would be only if you were selected to go to India.
Got it.
Let's take other questions. All right, let's see. What is the best way to connect and dialogue with host colleges and universities for securing a teaching opportunity at a specific institution? So I think I can take this question, what I would say is there are several ways. So we have what's called the Fulbright Scholar Directory, and if I could just pull up the website and show that to you, it's a wonderful resource. Here, if you just scroll up to the top, you'll see where we are on the main page. And what I would do is, so when you come on our landing page, you're at cies.org, and you would scroll down to view the scholar directory. And this is the U.S. Scholar Program. It's the core program. And let's do an advanced search. And what you could do is type in India and then just do a search for past grantees who went to India, and if there's, you could do it also a search by the home institution if there was anyone at your home institution, but specifically we can see here what discipline they're from. And let's say if you were from economics, you could perhaps reach out to this person here. This was a grantee from ASU, and they went to IIT Delhi, the Indian Institute of Technology. And so perhaps, you know, you could use the Fulbright network and reach out and say, oh, you know, was this a great place? You know, what was your experience at IIT Delhi in terms of your research or your project? And here we can see this person was lecturing and researching. So this is a great resource that I'd like to point out. Of course, you could also reach out to us at IIE. We could help you navigate what would be a potential host, how to start doing that search. And then once you identify a few institutions, just like Dr. Needham, she sent a few emails to identifying a couple of hosts. And you know, you send your CV, your project, what you hope to do, your project proposal, and depending on their interest, by gauging their interest, based on their reply, you would know who to proceed with. So she proceeded with Jawaharlal Nehru University. There was a favorable response. They could host her there. They provided the letter. So that's kind of the process. We also have guidance on our website. When you go and look through the catalog, there's that. And up here specifically under scholars, the program has a lot of application information. looking here, we have, if you're looking for teaching, there's some guidance here on letters of invitation and developing contacts abroad. So lots of information. We also host webinars, you know, on specific disciplines and the application walkthrough. All right, so let's see what another question is. If we can go back to the second point. Let's see. All right, if you are, let's see, we have a question about if you are Indian Heritage applicant, you have a lower chance of getting. We can talk about this. Dr. Needham, this would, you know, apply to you. You are of Indian Heritage, and you were successful, you know, on your grant to India. So could you speak about being a Heritage applicant? Because we do also have a lot of interest from Indians who are now U.S. citizens.
Well, I was at the conference. I certainly met quite a few Indians. So I don't think it works to your disadvantage. It may even work to your advantage. Again, it's hard to say. I've never sat on their committee, so I wouldn't know. But my sense was, as I was speaking to them, they are interested in good candidates. You know, they're interested in projects that will be, and then they're interested in who they think fits the kinds of purposes they want. And so Indian Heritage is not a disadvantage at all, because they assume that you have. Even if you were born abroad, you have an interest in India. If you were not born there, I, for example, had been out of the country longer than I had been in the country, so it made sense. Even though I have family there, I'd go back. They still felt that I could function in the capacity of being an ambassador for the U.S., you know, and for the Fulbright program. So. I didn't think it was a bar. I look at the names, there are quite a few Indians who apply and get it.
Right. And it's not just you as a scholar, you're also representing your home institution.
Exactly.
So it's not just, you know, there's a lot more involved and at stake and in terms of what potential collaborations could evolve from this.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, you are part of the larger kind of Fulbright mission of, you know, the diplomacy, the cultural ambassador, cultural diplomacy. So absolutely. So you as a participant, and then also representing Oberlin. So excellent. Let's see. We just have a few more minutes. I'll take one other question. Is there an age limit for senior research scholars? The answer is no. So we've had several professors emeriti apply to the Fulbright Scholar Program. That's not a problem. As long as you're in good health and can travel and do the research, you are welcome to apply. Let's see if there's any other questions. I think we just have one last one. Can you speak more about acquiring visas for the married partners of the grantees? So now you said your husband had the OCI card, which is kind of the Indian version of the green card, so it allows him to travel back and forth to India. Mm-hmm. From my understanding, for dependents or accompanying spouses to India, the commission would assist with that, or we at least provide the paperwork, and there shouldn't be an issue with that. So, did you see other grantees have their families with them or their spouses?
Well, at the conference, I met. In fact, she had brought three children. And one of her girls was not, I mean, she couldn't quite figure as a dependent because she was over 18 or something like that, one of her children. But the whole family was there. She went to Bhutan. She was not for India. Remember I said at the conference there were also the South, you know, the regions, the other. So she went to Bhutan. I think she didn't speak of any difficulty she had. Except for the fact that her daughter became 18 while they were still in the process of, you know, doing the visas and all that.
Right. Okay.
But
that's
simply one of those things. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's more information that we can provide for you, and you can reach out to the commission once you're selected. They are very supportive. I've seen several Fulbrighters bring their families to India, their spouses, their dependents, and India really wants to make it work. They're very invested in this, and so this is something, you know, they provide the dependents benefits and schooling allowance and all this kind of thing. So there's certainly some generous benefits there. More information, of course, is on the award description. In terms of what a benefit, you know, in terms of a dependent would be classified as such if they are accompanying you on the grant for 80% or more of the time. So they have to be with you in the country to qualify for dependent grants. So I think that wraps it up, Dr. Needham. I want to thank you for taking the time to join us today. It was a pleasure having you. It's wonderful to hear about your experience, and it was, you know, fresh in your memory. And I'm sure the collaborations with India and Oberlin will continue.
Yes, thank you. Yes.
Yeah. So once again, thank you. And we do have Dr. Needham's email address here on the screen. So if you'd like to follow up with her and have any questions, you can reach out to her. And my contact is also available on the award description, my phone number in the office, as well as the South and Central Asia email contact. And the last thing I wanted to end with is that we didn't get to cover, but we did cover a little bit about the mid-year, is that there are also other additional features that come with the grant. So aside from the mid-year conference that Dr. Needham attended in Delhi, there's the Regional Travel Award, which is available, and that's something that you would apply for once you are in the country, in India, and it allows you to you know, travel for 2 weeks to another country within the region and give lectures and talks. So again, that's some in-country perks. And so I would encourage you to check out the website. This webinar will be archived. I want to thank you for joining us, and please tune in for the upcoming application advising webinars. I believe we have one starting next week, and they will be available throughout the competition up until August 1st. So I believe we have one even the day or 2 days before the deadline. So don't wait till the last minute, but we will help you all throughout the process each step of the way. Once again, thank you so much. My name is Michelle Balorchi. If you have any questions about the awards to India or in South Asia in general, my contact is South and Central Asia at IIE.org. It's right here. Thank you very much, and check out our blogs on India. We have some grantee experiences you can read about. You can register your interest with us, and I look forward to assisting you on your Fulbright journey. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.